Hello again, May.
Hi, Phil.
And I guess we should mention to those who are listening for the first time, the program has been going on for well over a year now, once a week for an hour, and there hasn't been all that much repetition. There's an awful lot of material. May has been doing research on assassinations and political activities and conspiracies for a decade now, and each week she shares what revelations have come from the large amounts of research that she's done, and that's about it. I don't know. I don't want to say any more about that because I think May usually uses an hour very well without any help from me, aside from asking a few questions. So, May, where do you want to start?
Well,
William Proxmire was in the news Friday morning with something which you have been saying for a long time.
I'm very happy that he has brought up the question of the Watergate burglary investigation. Last week, let's go into the Watergate Hotel. And
okay,
the news report you're talking about, Proxmire, says that there should be an objective investigation of the Watergate arrest in Washington, D.C. So maybe we should explain what that is, Phil, again, because that is the story of the century. And if all you listeners will keep reading about this subject, and particularly get copies of the Realists that are being mailed by subscription or on the stands this next week, and get filled with the background of the Watergate, we'll go on from there. I'm asking everyone to get a chain letter reaction, to get a copy, and then the back, there's a place to order 10 more and pass them on. That's the story that ties in with my research, and so the news thing that you bring about that Proxmire mentioned is important to the Watergate affair.
Okay, let's explain,
explain again
for the benefit of those who have been hibernating in a cave somewhere, what the Watergate affair is. As you've called it, the Watergate affair, the Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C. is where Watergate comes from.
So far, the public officials back there call it the Watergate caper because they want to think it's something very light that just happened, like they just tripped into something and they're going to trip out. It's summer evening, you know, that they were caught in the act of burglary. But the Watergate caper is the Watergate affair, and it was described by Time magazine this week. They said the case quietly is burgeoning into the most intriguing and potentially volatile mystery of the election year. End quote.
It isn't probably so much a mystery to you as it is to them, though.
Well, I'm going to keep this thing rolling along now that The Realist is in print. I don't see any way out, in spite of massive news blackouts, to keep unraveling what has happened to the United States in the past 30 years if they start at the Watergate. Briefly, the Watergate Hotel is in Washington, D.C. It is the home of John and Martha Mitchell. They just sold their home this week. They're moving back to New York. They sold their two apartments to Senator Long. And also in the Watergate Hotel is the headquarters of the Democratic Committee, the National Committee. June the 17th, five men broke into the Democratic Committee and were caught removing parts of the ceiling and putting electronic devices in there, or they had cameras for photographing documents in the Democratic headquarters, and walkie-talkies were gathered by the police and all kinds of James Bond equipment. The nine men registered at the Watergate Hotel in May, and they returned again in June. And five of the nine men were arrested, and four have never been found, and the FBI will not release the names, and local police will not release the names of the four who have not been found. And the five men were taken down to the police department in Washington, and one of the men had told his wife, Bernard Barker told his wife, who was in Miami, if I don't call you by 3 in the morning, send the particular lawyer they had, Mr. Caddy, down to rescue us at the police department or get us. But evidently, the arrest was so close to the 3 o'clock call that she called Caddy, and he got down to the jail. But he got there before any of the five men had time to make a telephone call. And that's what blew the whole thing. I was down in L.A. for a press conference this last week, and one of the questions asked me was, if John Mitchell and the Justice Department and the CIA have this much power, couldn't they stop the whole thing from coming out in the first place? Well, the timing was such that the police got suspicious, and not everybody is in on the plot of the police departments or the FBI, not everyone. Gathering information is part of the general conspiracy. So they got suspicious that then a lawyer arrived without any call from any of the men who would know that they were arrested. So that opened up a whole exposure which creeped into the news, mostly into the Washington Post and the New York Times. The Monterey Herald had a few articles. The LA Times, the Chronicle have had practically nothing. But you can see from now on, as of August, September, and October, it'll make the news almost every single day. It's just going to keep opening up. What is so significant about the Watergate arrest? For my research, it was terribly significant because all the five men arrested were connected with and were part of the CIA, and all of them were involved in the Bay of Pigs invasion, except James McCord, the head man, and he was a member of the CIA at the time of the Bay of Pigs, but there's no record of his actual role at the time, except that he was employed by the CIA. But the other four were very active, and they were in charge of the funding of the CIA and getting the troops, and the man that they had to contact in the White House in case they were in trouble was in charge of the planning of the Bay of Pigs. Well, John Kennedy had said at the time of the Bay of Pigs invasion that there was an invisible government, a hidden government behind his back. And 11 years later, they were tampering with the electoral process. And the 10 years research that Phil said that I've done has been with who altered the election process every few years by way of murder or accident or attempted murder. Because John Kennedy lost the election in 1960 to Richard Nixon. And by 1963, the opposition to the people who put Nixon into power in the first place were then removed from power. Do you have a question on that, Phil?
Well, I was going to try and draw the discussion back to the Watergate and what has developed recently concerning the Watergate affair.
You
know, the recent events.
Well, the recent events, the point of my research was to show who alters the election of, say, killing Robert Kennedy when he's an opponent of Nixon, or killing John Kennedy, who was an opponent of Nixon 4 years earlier, or dunking Ted Kennedy at Chappaquiddick when there's no proof that he was even in the automobile, and by 69, he seemed the biggest contender for 72. And then the shooting of Wallace, who was getting the busing votes and the southern votes away from Nixon in 1972. Every time somebody steps in the way of Richard Nixon's success, it has been proven by the various researchers, not by the federal government, that there's been hanky-panky of a very serious nature that's been covered up until now. So the Watergate interested me because the same teams that were arrested had relationships to the evidence of the John Kennedy murder and were related to people, witnesses at that time and at the time of the Bay of Pigs invasion. And last year, in 1971, Louis Tackwood surfaced as an agent provocateur. He belonged to the criminal conspiracy section of the Los Angeles Police Department, and he also belonged to the FBI group and the criminal intelligence section that Evel Younger heads. And Louis Tackwood left the LAPD, or said he was leaving it, because he rejected his assignment on Squad 19. And Squad 19 was to hire provocateurs at the time of the 1972 convention that would take place in San Diego, and that many people would be killed inside the convention hall and outside the convention hall, and the people he hired would be also killed and silenced after doing their particular jobs. And then Nixon would have an excuse to create martial law. And then there was a suggestion that after that was created, of course, unbeknownst to Nixon, they would get Nixon. Well, I believed what Tackwood was saying and contacted the people that he went to for asylum after he surfaced, and his life is in danger right now. The L.A. Police Department had a gun at his head this last weekend when I was down in L.A., and he really has a very slim chance of making it out of this one because he holds the tapes of the whole Squad 19, which he calls his life insurance.
What do you mean the LAPD had a gun to his head?
Well, he was supposed to be at a meeting. I've never met Tackwood, and he couldn't come because he was chased, and two cops who wouldn't identify themselves threatened him with a gun and said, "You're not going to any press conference." He was supposed to be there with us. And they said they'd just blow him up. He came to the door of the place I was at, and he left and was told not to enter and see any of us or to have any contact, that they would kill him. So the copies of the arrangements of Squad 19 are in a safe place that would be published if he's killed, and he calls this his life insurance. But the names that Tackwood had to call, in case he was in trouble, the contact man, was codenamed Mr. White. And that was the code name of the two of the five men who were arrested at the Watergate Hotel. Their man's name to reach at the White House was Mr. White, whose name is Howard Hunt. And that was also the contact man for Taquin. The other name he had was Mr. Martin at the White House. And the man, James McCord, who was arrested at the Watergate Hotel, signed in the jail as Mr. Martin from New York City. Mr. Martin was the chief of security of the Central Intelligence Agency for 17 years for the compound, the grounds. He's been 19 years with the CIA, and he left the CIA supposedly 2 years ago to set up an agency to do security work. And what I'm trying to show in tying the Watergate to the past research is that he never left the CIA, that the tampering with the Democratic Party this time had something to do with the electoral process. There's a lot of guesses on what they were doing, but Taquin's name to call was Mr. Martin. Now, he also said that Squad 19 was to do with the emergency contingency plan. The excuse would be to round up the radicals. Well, the job that James McCord had, in addition to being chief of security of the Republican Party to reelect Nixon, and to be chief of security for the Miami Convention, he also belonged to a 16-man unit of a contingency group to take care of radicals, to take care of the news media and the mail. So he belonged to an emergency contingency group to handle radicals, which was what Squad 19 was about. And his name was Martin, what Taquin had, which was the name that McCord gave when he was arrested at the jail, was Mr. Martin. Now, Taquin said a year ago in 1971 that a fund was set aside for $10 million for security to hire the radicals for the entire martial law plan of paying provocateurs and for all the equipment necessary. A fund was set aside that would be divided for $10 million.
And has there ever been any evidence that that fund
has existed
or been set up?
Well, nobody has evidence of the fund, but in the Glass House tapes, when they were going into the planning stages of it, I guess, how much money do I have? How much salary do I get? He was hiring radicals. He was on a salary at the L.A. Police Department. And the planning stage fund in the Taquin allegations a year ago was that roughly $10 million had been set aside for that operation. They figure out what the operation cost.
Where did the money theoretically come from?
Well, from the group that was creating martial law, it would come from the Central Intelligence Agency. If McCord was working there all this time, Taquin didn't know. He knew it was a hidden government behind the elected government, but it had the approval of Richard Nixon to create martial law. So it came from the federal government.
Now, there's been a lot of talk, even this week, about a similar type of fund which was established for the use of the five men who broke into the Watergate. Well, is there any connection between those two funds? Are they one and the same?
Yeah, we'll go through the money thing, what happened this week with that $25,000, I mean, and then another $100,000. But getting back to the $10 million,
there's no connection between the two, do you think?
Well, the money's coming out of the same office. Yes, there is a connection. That's why I got into the Watergate so quickly, because there is a connection. Then a new law was passed in April 7th this year that money had to be declared who was the donor, because people were beginning to catch on to campaign money, because people are beginning to catch on to Richard Nixon. You know, in his book, My Sixth Crisis, his second crisis was a secret funding of money. So I called it Watergate his seventh crisis. You know, but people always suspected, where is Richard Nixon getting his money? So finally, through a lot of turmoil, a law was passed that after April 7th of this year, money would be declared the donor. But until then, no money was declared. So at the cutoff date, a lawyer, G. Gordon Liddy from the White House, designed the cutoff date and was in charge of the law that would be put into effect as of April the 7th. Up to that date, the Republicans announced that they had $10 million, but they would not state the source of that money at all, and Mitchell said he had no intention of disclosing the source of that money. Now, this week, Newsweek had an article about Arthur Brammer, and we're going to go into that the second half of the show. And Arthur Brammer had a diary, which he wrote in long before May, because when he was arrested, this was in May that he shot Wallace. And in the diary, he speaks of money, and he says There's tens of thousands of people and tens of millions of dollars. $10 million. He says, I just like to take some of them with me and Nixie. Now, if you think that he was a paid provocateur that's going to get off within a very short time, his maximum sentence right now is 15 years, and there's no guarantee that the federal government is even going to prosecute him on the charges. They said they have no interest in doing it. They haven't announced whether they're even going to go after his charges. So far, there's only the state charges, and the federal could double his charges, but right now, it looks horrendous, 132 years for Bremer. When I read the paper and break it down, they're all going simultaneously, and it's 16 years penalty, and 15 other charges were dropped on him with no reason given. So that's not very long for, you know, like there's supposed to be, allegedly, this $1 million fund set for James Ray in a Swiss bank, and the time they're serving wouldn't be very long if these charges are dropped. But I believe there's evidence that Bremer was a hired killer. But in his diary, he talks about $10 million, which is an interesting fund when Tackman talks about it.
Yeah, it's just a coincidence, but you can't say anything more than that. The fact that he says it's tens of millions of dollars, he could have just as easily said hundreds of millions.
Yeah, but it's one of the things you have to go into, Phil, because there's a safety valve in a hired assassin having a certain name or figure. Remember when Sirhan was arrested and he went to the jail, they say, what's your name? And he wouldn't say. And they say, what country do you come from? And he wouldn't say. And where do you live? And he wouldn't answer. And all he'd say to the police was, do you know Jack Kirschke? And he kept bringing this name up. Well, Kirschke was a safety valve because the Kirschke case is being reopened now and investigated. And the same man that tampered with the evidence in the Kirschke case that would allow him to go free someday is the same man that handled the weapons in the Sirhan case.
Well, what do you mean it's a safety valve?
Why would
Sirhan's mentioning Kirschke's name be a safety valve?
Because if the police department framed Kirschke, he was a district attorney down in L.A., and if the police department framed him on evidence and then got the sentence reduced because there was no evidence of his part in the murder, or if there was a question of the evidence or his being guilty, and Sirhan knew something about the L.A. Police Department that no one else knew when they come in and get arrested. It's a case that stinks to high heaven in the tampering of evidence. And it's very interesting that a boy going to Pasadena City College who wasn't really around at the time or into that case brings up the Kirschke case. And that the evidence of Dwayne Wolfer handling that and handling Sirhan's case in the same manner should be coming before the courts very shortly now. That has to be, you know, the only thing he would talk about with the chief of police was the reduction of sentence that they had to do to Jack Kirschke from death penalty to life, and now they're going to open up the evidence. So I think it's a safety valve, and these things become more than coincidence. When they put them down in writing, they can use them later.
Okay, now let's get back. Something that the press has been attracted to has been the financing, the money behind the Watergate thing, the Watergate affair, and pull back to that, ahead in your notes?
No, that's okay, because, you know, we jump all around. We bring enough material
Try and keep train of thought somewhat
well, I think
coherent.
The money thing is important.
Be something new.
To keep it coherent?
To keep it coherent. There's so much material that we cover every week.
Okay, let's talk about the money game. That's an interesting section, because whenever you go to money in any of these things, whether it's Oswald money or Sirhan or Wallace, then you begin to find where the conspiracy really is. And if you stick with that, it's the very best place to start. That's where I started my research originally.
Yeah, usually when money moves, usually there's paperwork that moves with it.
That's right.
Unless you're dealing strictly in cash.
Okay, when the men were arrested at the Watergate Hotel, there was $5,600 in cash in their pockets and some in the room that they had checked in at the time of arrest. And the money was in consecutive $100 bills. It wasn't picked up from various places. And right away, the press and the police authorities thought, this is easy to check because it's brand new money in consecutive order. Well, they did check it, and they checked it to the bank account of Bernard Barker, one of the five men arrested. And Bernard Barker was the conduit of funds for the Bay of Pigs, and it seems that he was the money man for the Watergate capers and more besides that, because it implied they were doing it for some other purpose. So they traced his money to Bernard Barker's bank account in Florida, and he checked out these crisp $89,000 bills, $100 bills, April 24th out of his Republic Bank in Florida. Where did the money come from? They checked it out further to a bank in Mexico where they said it belonged to a particular client. And they've checked it to a bank, and I have another article at home that they traced it now to Chile. But Bernard Barker will not say the source of the money went to Chile. And in the article I did in The Realist, I bring up the question of, because Chile and the ITT and other questions of the ITT come into the Watergate. Who put the money, $89,000, into the bank in Chile or in Mexico? Now, that has not been disclosed yet. The name of the man whose account transferred it to from Mexico to the Miami bank has been named, but he says he has a lot of clients that he takes care of, and his name is Manuel Ogerio de Guerre, and he's a wealthy Mexican lawyer who has American clients, and his signature is on the check, $89,000, to Miami. And then it was checked out by Barker, and we don't know where the rest is. See, $5,600 was on them at the Watergate, but nobody else can spend the remaining, you know, 80 or more thousands, because it's all numbered and they'll be tied into the Watergate affair. So a lot of people are sitting around with these $100 bills. Oh, 30,000 of it was spent for electronic equipment and hotel reservations at the Watergate and what they called Mickey Mouse capers. The press called Mickey Mouse capers in 1950 equipment, and they put them down as outdated old gumshoes, you know, bungling something. That equipment cost $30,000 for that outdated equipment. So there's still 60,000 or 55 floating around. Now, last week, 25,000 was deposited. They discovered in Bernard Barker's account, $25,000 was deposited the same day that $89,000 was deposited. But this money went to Mr. Dahlberg, who works for the committee to reelect Richard Nixon, and he gave it to Marie Stans, who resigned Secretary of Commerce to work for the committee. And Stans gave it to a Mr. Sloan, who worked for the committee to reelect Richard Nixon, who resigned. He retired about 4 weeks ago and said for personal reasons he was leaving the committee to reelect Richard Nixon, the same time John Mitchell resigned. The money, this $25,000, then went to G. Gordon Liddy, who's the lawyer in charge of finances for the committee. And he has resigned because he refused to answer questions from the FBI. The money went to Florida to Barker's account, and the same time the other $89,000. Now, people who want to reelect Richard Nixon and gave the money to Dahlberg from the Midwest didn't intend that it go into the Watergate robbery. It was put down there and checked out by Bernard Barker. So the money from the committee to reelect Richard Nixon and the secret funding of the $10 million, which also pays a salary to James McCord, who was arrested, is all mingled. The secret money, the private donations, the source of Nixon's funding is very secret. And because I believe it's linked to the group that do want to overthrow the government, they have to keep it secret. And now that there's a lawsuit going, all of the names involved will come out. And every name associated with the men from the Watergate belongs to the very far right wing who have been supporting Agnew for president all along. They're not Nixon people. I could name eight of them, and they're not one of them.
Why don't you name eight of them?
Well, one of them is Buckley, who's for Ashbrook. And he is very far. He's pushing the right-wing platform. If you've been reading the paper this week, they're pushing out any consideration except the people that, there was an article in the paper Friday that they're paranoid and wanting just the right wing. And Buckley has been named. In the first stories broke that Richard Helms and Buckley were the one who suggested Howard Hunt to work in the White House. Now, they linked the Buckley to Howard Hunt, who was arrested, who was a very far right-wing, works with the Agnew people. G. Gordon Liddy, who resigned from the committee to reelect Richard Nixon, was the founder of Young American for Freedom, and they're supporting Agnew for president. They've been infiltrated by the group that went into Dallas at the time John Kennedy was killed. Another group, the Carl McIntyre, the religious group, the Agnew and Q, and that group are tied in with Charles Colson, who was originally with the OSS, and Charles Colson is the cutoff man. From the White House, Richard Nixon, there was Charles Colson, who said he hired Howard Hunt to work in the White House. Howard Hunt was the name that the two men arrested had in case they were caught. Howard Hunt has the walkie-talkies in his White House desk that connected to James McCord. This group is tied with Carl McIntyre, and that is a far right-wing supporting Agnew and Key and the religious group to go into the fanatical Vietnam, you know, escalation of war of Vietnam, and they're much farther right than Richard Nixon. They go into the China lobby group and the group down at Taiwan. And Colson was down at Taiwan. He worked with that group, and he works closely with them. That was a contact man for Howard Hunt. As I say, Liddy was the founder of Young Americans for Freedom. This is another group. Is Frank Sturgis was arrested at the Watergate Hotel, and he is associated with Claude Kirk and Reverend Hargis, who was under suspicion at the time John Kennedy was killed. Frank Sturgis was apprehended by the FBI at that time, and he works with the American Council of Churches, that the extremely right-wing group that has no patience for any of the laws they want to clamp down on pornography. They don't want to end the war in Vietnam. They want to stop the abortions, and they think they're going in supporting the Jesus freaks into, and this again begins a kind of thing like you had in Germany, separating the Christians from the Jews one way, only one way, you see, and the funding of Graham. It's the connection of the men at the Watergate links to the very, very far right-wing extremists right down the line.
Not necessarily to true Nixon supporters, are you saying, but
that's right. If you have the true Nixon supporters, there wouldn't be the hidden government, because if they're going to do Nixon in, then there has to be a group that doesn't approve of what he's doing. And one of the big problems in understanding the Watergate affair and this group that organized Young Americans for Freedom and is for Agnew is that Agnew has been sponsored heavily by the people that overthrew Greece and the Greek military junta and stopped elections there and stopped freedom of the press or the radio and communications. And those people pushed Agnew to be vice president. And now this group is firmly entrenched in the Watergate affair.
So really, the links that the press are building of this being tied to President Nixon through the White House, you don't feel are accurate. You feel that it's people within the White House, but not necessarily Nixon, because Nixon is the ultimate target.
Well, it doesn't matter. You see, if Nixon is the target, he could still be the planner and not realize how much he's hated. See, Nixon knows that if he doesn't go with the extreme right wing, he would be the target. So he thinks that by placating them, he doesn't have to be the target, and this may be true. If he goes completely fascist after 1972 and puts in the new Constitution and the new Bill of Rights and turns his back on Russia and China and only uses them for trade or exploitation and not for peace, Nixon doesn't have to be killed if he does everything they want, but he'd certainly be the target if he didn't.
Okay, we're at the halfway point.